Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Seeking What They Sought. I'm one of your hosts, Anthony Leiter, and as usual, welcome to the party. All right. Well, so good to be back with you guys once again. For today's episode, we are super, super stoked because we have another episode of Bad Explanations for you guys. Now, this one is one we've been wanting to do for a while, so we were super excited to finally get to it. This one is all about swearing. And in this one, we're asking the question, is swearing inherently wrong? Now, part of the reason why we were excited for this episode is because we actually got to do some engagement with you guys for this one. We had done an Instagram poll and we asked a question or two on Facebook, and we're super, super excited to engage with that. So, without further ado, let's dive into this episode on swearing.
Hey everyone, welcome to Seeking What They Sought. This is Jesse, your boy Jesse, and we have your boy Anthony, and then we have Sean.
All of the boys are here.
How are you, Sean? How are you doing this fine day?
I have no words for you, which is good because we're talking about swearing.
That's true.
I only have words I cannot say on this podcast.
I can't say the words I have for you.
So we're talking about swearing today, cussing, cursing. Well, actually, you know what's funny? I just wanted to begin with take issue with even calling it swearing.
Yeah, say more about
because one of the verses, I'm sure we'll get to it, that talks about is where, in essence, it talks about not swearing or to let your yes be yes, your no be no, et cetera. And the thing that it's talking about is not saying the F word. It's talking about saying, like, I'm going to do something and then not doing it. So even the fact that we call it swearing is kind of funny because I'm not really swearing that I'm going to do something. I'm just saying a word that has other connotations. So cussing. We're talking about cussing.
Cursing. It almost seems more accurate to say we're talking about words. Like, we're talking about language.
That's so massive.
It's really like, broad. But
we're just talking about the entirety of language right now.
Well, really, I'm going to attempt to forge ahead in a serious way. We're really talking about, like, how should we as Jesus followers, like, use our words as it pertains to ourselves and others, right? That's really what we're talking about.
That's a lot more narrow.
True, rather than
you just
words.
Said it's really about words.
That's fair.
Let's pull out the Oxford Dictionary. And go
what's the word of the day?
One.
True. Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
So I don't know about you guys, but for me, I remember the day. I think I was probably like 11, and I was pretty ticked off at my mom, and I said the word freaking, and
Okay, wait. Did you say freaking or fricking?
No, I said freaking. It's like the stage of life where you're saying the full word because you haven't shortened it yet. You haven't said it enough to shorten it. So I think I was just, I don't remember even the words I used around it. I know I said freaking in the sentence and it was kind of directed at her. And I don't remember what happened, but that might be part of the punishment.
That you blacked out. Remember. You blacked out the punishment.
No, I don't. She didn't do anything. I don't think physical to me, but she did not like that. And I said freaking, let alone anything. I don't think I could. I think my mom really didn't like it when I said stupid too. So that's where it started. And then today, with the vocabulary that we have as friends, I think that my mom would be very disappointed. She'd be so disappointed.
No, yeah, for sure. My parents were similar. My dad came down. It's so interesting because in like the parenting dynamic of my parents, my dad did not do a lot of like the sort of micromanage-y sort of parental like rules-based things. Like he kind of left those things to my mom a lot more, which is why a lot of the stories I think I've shared on the podcast are more like my mom did this, my mom did that, whatever. But yeah, with swearing and even veggie swear words, I put that in quotes, my dad came down really hard on those. Like, I remember when I said fricking for the first time at home, my dad was super mad. He was like, don't ever say that. Like, So I never really grew up saying that word, like even into high school when like other people would be saying that. I never really, like that never really caught on because he came down super hard. The same thing with like darn and dang it. Like when I said darn, I would say like, darn it. My dad got so mad when he heard me saying that. So.
Well, and like you're like, I don't know about your parents, but it was that certain words were like you said, veggie, they were stand-ins.
Yeah, for like stand-ins for other harsher words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but what's funny is that like, I guess there's like a whole conversation of, can I just say the exclamation, like, darn it.
Right, yeah.
And not mean anything more than that.
Instead just of like, darn you, like directed at a person.
Well, just like, I'm annoyed that something negative happened. Darn it. Right. You know? Like, I don't have to mean anything more than that. Or like saying, oh my gosh. Like, oh, that was true. A big one because yep. It's yeah. Like, oh, it's like saying, oh my God, but you're saying,
it's basically
gosh,
the same thing.
Instead of, or saying, geez. You yep. know? I'm like, yep. I know that any time I heard someone say geez, I was not thinking Jesus. I was right. just thinking they were exclaiming geez.
Were your parents like kind of, did your parents come down on those words? Because I felt like more at like Adventist school and like stuff and church and stuff, like they came down really hard on like, oh my gosh, I think it's probably geez.
It's probably a mix of everything.
Okay, yeah.
What about you, Sean? You were a pastor's kid like Anthony.
Yeah, it was definitely a mix. I mean, it was a big deal at school too, especially I just remember grade school. We would literally have debates like, oh, your family lets you say gosh. Well, oh, and you know, there's the one kid that said, oh my God. And it was just the biggest deal in fourth grade.
Right.
That kid was going to hell.
That kid was lost.
Well,
he's already burning.
It's like the non-Christian kid in the Adventist school.
For sure.
Or it was you, Sean. It was you, the one who everyone else had good kids and like, don't hang around Sean.
I mean, half the elementary teachers at my school went to my dad's church, so I was in a very watched over circle.
That's real.
But no, I think for sure, you know, it was frowned upon. You know, we're talking about, are we talking about two separate things here, even with using what's commonly referred to as taking God's name in vain, the third commandment, mm-hmm. versus just general swear words. And maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but in my context, I would definitely say the worst sin was anything that used God's name. That was considered the worst. Yeah. Even over the F word, I think, which would still get you in so much trouble. There's definitely a hierarchy.
I don't know about that one. I feel like the F word's up there.
It's up there. It's up there. I don't know. I kind of saw it as at least on par, in my opinion. Mm. But
yeah.
But that's, I think it depends though. That's what I mean is there's definitely a hierarchy of swear words, which ones are worse than others.
Sure, yeah.
And
well,
it's kind
I remember
of a,
there used to be a time where you couldn't say hell.
Uh-huh.
Or the thing referring to your butt,
right?
In
like that word,
network TV,
yeah,
in network TV,
oh, true.
And now that's
yeah.
now it's like all the time,
right?
And so
right.
it's interesting how that shifts.
Well, also, I'm just going to say, as a kid, there would be times that we would listen to an old hymn, and it would use, you know, the term for donkey, yeah.
the donkey word,
and it would be either the King James version, it would either be the King James version or in like an old style hymn, and you know, all the kids, we look at each other and we start snickering.
Oh, guys, that was the way that you got away with it.
Oh yeah,
that was the way you were.
If it was
okay
in a
with
hymn,
it
was safe.
You would just say, "Well, no, you would just be quoting the Bible." Right?
Oh yeah, true.
So Balaam's ass, and you're yep. talking, and you're talking yeah. about his donkey, and you're just like, "Yes, I can say
I
it."
I can say yep. it.
I know yeah, it's true. That's as a kid though, that's yeah. the thing. Like as a kid, you don't think about it. You just, it's all superficial. It's like, this gets me in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore it's also funny. It's almost kind of just this natural progression as kids. Like when something's upsetting you, it's almost at the same time funny.
If it upsets
also,
the grownups, like, I want to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of counterproductive the way that we have sometimes approached it. But, no, definitely as a kid, you know, I was not allowed to say gosh, geez. Those were definitely things that
mm-hmm.
Were prohibited in my household.
Definitely.
But it was interesting, like, yeah.
To actually talk about the effects on it today, I do think that there's an importance in potentially helping to revere the name of God.
Hmm.
Because I don't believe that the third commandment is talking about things like, oh my God, mm-hmm. but at the same time, like, having a respect for the idea that God's name is higher than other things, I think actually long-term is meaningful.
For sure.
Yeah.
At the time, I think it's exactly what you're saying, Sean, where it's just like, oh, that would get me in trouble. But I think long-term is just, it's nice to have that reverence for God. I think it puts him in that space that's like, okay, he is above me, and that's good. I ought to sit in that space and recognize that. But it definitely is funny because the reasoning for not saying that was the third commandment, which I don't know if we want to talk about it now, but
I think you should. I mean, go right into it since we're talking about it. What to you, Jesse? You just said you don't think that the third commandment's talking about those specific words that are uttered. What do you think when you hear the third commandment? What is it talking about there? Taking the Lord's name in vain.
Yeah, like when you read through it, it's to take a name in vain, or to use a name in vain would be to use it in a way that is meaningless or useless. And I think that's kind of where we get the transition to it's referring to, oh my God. But really, I think when we look at it, what God seems to be trying to communicate to the Israelites is, don't use my name in a way that misrepresents who I am.
Yeah.
And we really get into that when you see, especially as time goes on in the Old Testament, where you have the people of Israel kind of turn away from God. But then what's interesting is they start using God as justification for some of the stuff they do. Like, for instance, when they take the Ark of the Covenant out, it's Eli's sons take the Ark of the Covenant out with them to battle. But they're not surrendered to God.
Right.
They don't really care.
They're doing all sorts of stuff.
They're doing all their own stuff. But what they do want is they want this higher power to give them a victory. But really, what's the benefit? What's it for? It's for them. It's not for God's kingdom. It's not for the furtherance of his glory. It's not for the protection of his people. It's literally just for our victory. And that's the way they're thinking of it. And so then God just like deserts them. He's like, this is not what I am. I'm not a token to be used. Or in other ways where it's Jesus will reference things that the Pharisees say, in reference to, in the law it says that we can evict people or charge them really high rent or whatever it is, but the law says it, so we can do it. And it's that kind of thing that it's like, you're doing this kind of in the name of God allows me to,
right?
But this isn't really who God is, especially because, and Jesus calls them to task over doing that to widows. You know, women who don't have an income, they don't have a status in that culture. And so he's like, how dare you, in essence, my name to do these things. And they're not exactly using his name, but I think it's that type of thing where you're using God as justification or saying something about him that is not really who he is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely tend to agree. Yeah. Sean, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say really quick, one way I've heard it, and I would have to pin down exactly where I heard it, was that when you actually look at the language used there for the third commandment, that to say take my name in vain may not be the most accurate way of translating it, that even just the word carry would work better, that you the way you carry God's name. And that kind of has more implications of the way you live, your reputation, who you are beyond just your words.
How you're carrying God's name into the world.
So, and I think that's much deeper, and it can include what you say, of course. And I think, like you said already before, Jesse, that there are, you know, there is value to understanding God's name and how we use it. And but beyond that too, it's much more, it's the third commandment, I think, as we've been talking about, is much less superficial than we've made it at times.
It's so much deeper.
It's a much higher calling.
Oh, yeah.
What were you going to say, Anthony?
Oh, just that I guess to sort of like synthesize what you guys are saying, like to me in my head, I separate the two categories, I think, like the idea of oath taking and profanity in a sense, or maybe expletive.
You mean like swearing, I mean taking an oath.
Swearing, oath taking, I think I'd put in one category, like to swear or to take an oath, and then I'd put like intensifiers or expletives in a different category, although I think they're connected under, you know, like the language category. But yeah, that sounds like what you're saying too, is like, to me, it seems like they're two separate, you know, entities in a sense.
Yeah, I feel like it's a problem with the easiness of certain interpretations. Mm. Like when it's easy to think, oh, I'm hearing the phrase, oh my God, that sounds like taking the Lord's name in vain. Mm-hmm. And then that just becomes the predominant
view,
understanding, yeah, of that sort of thing. When it's like, no, it's not at all. And in fact, I think teaching kids to not say, oh my God, from that sort of background, like that's yeah, your reason for it, I feel like it waters down that commandment so much that then we don't notice when, and I'll speak about the political right now, because I think the political left tends to have its own religion, but the political right tends to use Christianity, that then we don't even notice when the political right is using the name of Jesus or the name of God as support for some of the things that they're doing that are not furthering God's kingdom or not really interested in being surrendered or submitted to God, but rather in furthering a political agenda. Mm. And that's using God's name in vain. It's carrying God's name into the world in a way that is misrepresenting who he is.
That's good.
And because we've been taught, oh yeah, it's just, oh my God, then I think we miss out on the real world depth of meaning that it has in some really like – it's really uncomfortable ways that we might be using his name in vain. So, yeah.
Oh yeah, 100%. So, I mean, there's another one story that comes to mind, which is a terrible story. I'm hesitant to bring it up, but so I'll just talk about it briefly. And if anyone who's curious, they can look it up for themselves. It's a story of Jephthah. You guys know what I'm talking about? Where?
Remind me.
So Jephthah, this is in the book of Judges.
With his daughter.
Yeah, with his daughter. He basically swears, he makes this public oath in front of everyone that, you know, the first thing that walks into his tent after the victory that God gives them, he will sacrifice.
Walks out? It walks out of his gate.
Yeah, exactly. He'll offer to God as a sacrifice. And it seems like in the context, he's referring to like a goat or a sheep or, you know, whatever animal. But at the end of the story,
just hoping that goat wanders out.
Exactly, he's hoping. But at the end of the story, it's his daughter. Like, you know, they win the victory or whatever, but it's his daughter who walks out, and so he does it, right? Like he sacrifices her, which is
it's not certain that he does or doesn't.
It seems to be left ambiguous.
But the thing about that exact story is people use that as like, what the heck? Like, the Old Testament is like, God is such a different God.
Right.
And you're like, no, this is literally a story about a man who is misusing.
Yeah. It's taking the Lord's name in vain.
Name of God.
It's literally that.
Yeah. He's like, God, if you do this thing for me, I'll do this. And then he makes a grand gesture. And God's like, I don't need that from you.
Yeah.
I love these people. I just want you to be faithful and follow me so that the kingdom you're building isn't the kingdom that's going to be the type that sacrifices their daughters because they think I want them to.
Exactly. Which is why it seems, sorry, I feel like I cut you off.
No, go for it.
Well, I think that, which is exactly why Jesus in Matthew, you know, which is kind of exactly what we're talking about, where he talks about oaths, you know, Matthew 5:37, where he says, let your yes be yes, your no be no. Don't swear on anything. Don't swear. He says, don't take an oath at all, either by heaven or by the throne of God or by the earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. Do not take an oath by your own head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. Let what you say be yes or no. I feel like that's exactly why he says that, because it's like, you don't need to take these oaths, make these grand gestures. And I really love this verse because some friends and I have a Bible study, and we recently were talking about this like a week or two ago. And one of them brought up, it almost seems as if Jesus is saying, wow, like it's so easy to kind of coat like your promises with religious language, to like use religious language as like a, you know, like a, I don't even know, to like paint it almost, paint your words with religious language to make it seem more potent. But he's saying, like, you don't even need to do that. Like, God doesn't care about that. Just, like, say yes, say no, and then live it. Like, you don't need to talk about it, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting because that passage you mentioned is sometimes used to kind of go against this idea of cussing, I guess, since I don't, you know, using the word swearing.
Like expletives?
We're kind of establishing separately, but... yeah, I think what you're saying makes sense, Anthony, that it's not related to that. And, you know, it's just interesting to think about too, Anthony. I don't know if we want to get into this right now, but mainly, you know, when we look at the history of swear words,
Yeah.
Specifically just cussing, you know, it's not just in Christianity, right? We're talking about this base question of is swearing a sin? Is cursing, cussing a sin? But even in just general culture, swearing is taboo. It still is. It's changed over the course of time, of course, what can be said on television or, of course, with the internet, everything got thrown out with the idea of censorship. So I guess, what do you think? Like, where did that... I know you've kind of looked at that a little bit. Do you have any thoughts of... how do we get here? How do we get to this point where this is an evil thing, where we're even talking about cussing being a sin?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm by no means an expert. I just did some intense Googling and sleuthing. But yeah, I basically like read a bunch of Wikipedia pages, and I also looked into this book called A Brief History of Swearing by Melissa Moore. Pretty interesting book.
Anthony, after you described how you learned all this information, you've lost all credibility.
Someone sent you a video on Facebook. How you learned.
Someone
it.
Sent me a video on my aunt sent me a video on Facebook, and that's how I found this information.
And the person that was saying it on the video, they were dressed in a white coat. And so they knew they were a doctor. They had a stethoscope around their neck, so they know what they're talking about.
They're clearly a doctor.
It was actually about the vaccine, but let's talk about swearing.
True. I love how political we're getting in this episode. So I guess maybe for a little more credibility, I'm going to quote Melissa Moore. She did this whole study on the history of swearing in the West, and actually pretty interesting. She kind of like traces profanity all the way back to like ancient Rome or slightly before. And just sort of like, I'm not going to get into like all of the weeds of it, but essentially talks about how like, essentially as long as we've had written documentation, there's been profanity and expletives that have been used. Usually like back then it started from like sexual innuendos, euphemisms, stuff like that. As well as like religious stuff. And that's where it seems to like the divide seems to have come from, is like the difference between religious profanity and like sexual euphemisms, which I think we kind of see like in our current like state with swearing and profanity, where there's like kind of like religious swearing and oaths and like curses and stuff like that. But then there's like more like sexual innuendos, stuff like that.
Wait, what do you mean? What do you mean with like religious swearing? Is that we're talking like, oh my God, or things like that?
Yeah. So essentially, she talks about even the word profanity is a Latin word that comes from the word. I'm looking at my notes here. The word, profanus. The word profane comes from the Latin word profanus, literally meaning outside the temple, which was used to basically describe in a way that someone back then would be using a word to desecrate something that is holy. So they would take like the name of some god and then like try and desecrate it with like something common or secular or sexual or something like that.
Interesting.
And she sort of traces how those two lines have sort of entered into all the way throughout history, at least since like first century times, kind of like into our language today, where we have kind of like those two categories of like religious profanity and like more like sexual euphemisms, stuff like that.
Got it.
So pretty interesting. She also talks about how through a lot of like more recent history, the like four letter words that we consider like expletives now weren't actually expletives for them during the time, like during the like 1500s, 1600s, stuff like that, like the F word, the B word, words like that. They were just common words that were used by people. And then they've sort of like evolved and like morphed over the years. So it definitely...
So what you're saying is some of like the cuss words is we took them from the past because they maybe weren't used very much, and then we started using them in a way that was like
that seems to
profane
be,
in essence.
It seems to be
that's funny.
Or like she talks about the F word specifically didn't have a sexual connotation to it for a while, but then it was infused with a sexual connotation throughout time. And she talks about
what did it used to mean.
I'm not sure. She gives a few examples of like people that had the F word in their name, like which is pretty unfortunate. But I guess for that time period,
haven't we heard about any of them in history books?
True.
Actually,
that's revisionist history
why.
Right there.
No, I know exactly why. It's because all of us teenage boys would have been. I mean, maybe girls too. But like for us as a friend group, we would have latched onto that.
Oh yeah.
And just
that would have been our identity for a whole semester.
We would have said it everywhere we could. We said it everywhere we could, and then just been like, "Well, it's just someone's name. That's it.
We're safe." Exactly.
Can you imagine can you imagine that us just doing that on our high school campus, like our Christian high school campus? It's a name.
So bad. So much trouble. So I feel as if like what her study kind of showed me was just like the morphing and changing like nature of words and language throughout time, and how like different words have different connotations and now than they did then, and then different now than they did then. Did I just say that? This is a tongue twister. Yes. Different then than they did now, and different now than they did then. She talks about in ancient Rome how a lot of their like sexual innuendos and euphemisms were based around the idea of power and control, because in Roman culture, like Roman men were seen as like powerful, dominant, and in control. So, like a lot of their euphemisms were based around like Roman men being like sexually aggressive towards any gender essentially. So, it definitely. It makes me think as I like ponder and reflect on it, like how interesting it is that how quickly we latch onto certain words and we kind of have this perception that they're inherently sinful or evil or wrong, when language itself is so changing and amorphous, and like words that were used like, you know, in the time of Moses to mean, you know, sexual euphemisms we don't even know about today. And so, so it kind of begs the question, like, are words inherently evil or wrong or sinful to use?
He just drops that existential bomb. Are words inherently something? It is interesting.
That's really the core of this discussion, right? Like, are certain words inherently wrong to use? Because that's kind of, at least for me, I feel like that's what I kind of was brought up with, kind of that idea.
Well, Anthony, you have gone on a little bit of an evolution, because as long as I've known you, in essence, how many years has it been? It's been over a decade.
It's been a long time. I think it's
been
17,
like 13, 14 years.
I thought it was 17 years.
Is it 17? Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, as long as I've known you, you literally were the guy who did not ever cuss.
True.
You never said any cuss words.
Very true.
And
except in Japanese.
Didn't everybody at our school learn like a Korean cuss word because of the
funny.
Korean exchange
just out of me, but yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah. but I never heard, at least, okay,
in
to
English.
Rephrase this, I never ever heard you use an English cuss word.
For sure.
Well, what's interesting
is... Are you
going
to out me again?
For the sake of honesty, that it's... All four of us cuss.
Yeah.
But the thing is that, at least for me, it's generally just in our friend group. I don't know anywhere else that I will say some of the terrible things I've said to you guys. and part of it is because we're friends and we're safe, right? Like it's a form of humor. Because we all know that we're not the kind of guys who would just say these things, so that it's almost funnier to say it to each other, because it's just, I don't know, it's just that humor part of it. And the reason I'm saying all of this is because I think for me, I went through a journey too where I never ever cussed. Mm-hmm. And then actually, I kid you not, some of the first times I can remember cussing was actually directed at God.
Wow.
And it was in the realm of I was in this really odd relationship with this girl that I was pretty mad about, because something had happened and she'd finally said all the words I wanted her to say. And then the feeling though that I came away from that moment with was really confused. And so I remember I was on my way back to Sunset Lake Camp, where
classic.
All three of us worked. Was it that year? Maybe it was the year before you were there, Sean. Anyways, I was there we were doing like a communion and I just couldn't sit. Like I was so mad because I've been praying and asking God about this girl for a long time. She finally said everything I wanted, but I didn't feel right about it. And so I remember I left and I went out into Church Bowl, which is like where we have church on Saturdays. It's the middle of the forest. And I just vented to God and about him, to him though, just unfiltered, completely unfiltered. And there's quite a few F words in there. There's quite a few other ones.
Wow.
Just because it's how I felt. I was actually very angry. And these were the words that best described the feelings that I was feeling. And what's funny is I came out of that moment after venting to God, feeling, and just being in that space where I think he was there, I came out of that moment feeling closer to him. It's one of the closest times I've ever felt to God.
Wow.
And I think it was because there was a level of honesty. I don't think it was about word choice or anything like that. I think it was a spirit of honesty and what came to be surrender to his way. But I think that was pretty interesting. And so ever since then,
you're a heathen.
Broke the dam. Well, broke the dam, at least in a way that like I'm not afraid to say them.
Yeah, totally intended.
Oh, true. Oh, dang it.
That's way too perfect.
Wow.
Ooh, that was low-hanging fruit.
That's deep.
Wow. I didn't even notice.
You didn't even plan that.
And this is me. I'm like the pun guy. Okay, yeah. So anyways, yeah, it kind of it broke the earth
the water break
that hold the water back. ever since then, I've been less concerned about saying them. However, I think there's probably a whole nother realm of talking about when it's okay or when I think it's okay to use it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, that's my story. But Anthony, you had like a shift too.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't know if you want to talk about it, but I'm just saying that you did.
I'm down to talk about it. Yeah, I grew up as the classic Adventist kid, classic pastor's kid in a lot of ways. Like I was rebellious in some ways, but language was definitely not one of them. Like I remember learning all of the curse words in like fifth grade or so, fourth grade from like a friend of mine was like the rebellious, like the bad kid in class. forget his
Wait,
name.
Was it who I think it was?
I don't think you know, cause it was before I moved to the Auburn area.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where he is these days. I think his name is David.
Took you behind the slide and told you all the bad words.
Yeah. Hey, Anthony. Here's these words. It was something like that. Like, I think it was in, like the locker room, like the pool locker room. Either that or, like, the bathroom. And he was just like, yo, here are these words.
All sketchy places.
Yeah, just the sketchy place.
These are the places where these types of things would happen.
The places where the bad kids at school hang out. and I remember he told me all the words.
In the pool locker room. They're just in there. Just in there for some reason.
Exactly. I remember he told me all the words, and I was like, oh, snap. And I remember later that day, I remember this so vivid. This is one of my most vivid elementary school moments. I remember going to the bathroom by myself later and looking in the mirror and, like, testing the words out on my just by myself, no one there. I just said them to myself. I was like, oh, I don't know how. It was like the most bad thing I'd ever done in my life up until that point. It was the biggest sin I'd ever committed in my like what 9-year-old mind or 10-year-old mind.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I made a decision then and there. I was like, I'm never gonna say these words ever. And what's interesting is I've like unpacked that later on in life. I realized that a part of that was also due to the fact that this is a lot to unpack, but essentially like my blackness and me being a black man growing up in like a mainly like Caucasian like culture and setting, I kind of felt this need to like distance myself from what I perceived as like ghetto culture. Like I don't want to be seen as that by others. So I'm never going to say
these
words.
You're talking about Adventist ghetto culture, right?
Yeah.
Just like, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
saying things like veggie links when you're mad. Oh,
no, I'm talking about like what I perceive. No, okay, you got it.
I get it. I'm just
look at
messing
me.
With
I'm,
you.
This happens so often. I'm such a genuine friend. I believe in you so strongly.
You felt like I missed.
I felt like
I missed
you missed
point
it.
Of what you
so
said
I'm helping you from
much.
A genuine heart. Look how good of a friend I am to you.
Oh man,
that's okay. Not how I see it, Anthony. I think it's you think so little of Jesse that he could even understand your abstract thoughts.
Well, maybe there's that too,
you.
But you know, I'm not going to say that. So yeah. So I
no, but that sorry, I screwed up.
No, you're
a really
good. You're good.
Important point. That's a heavy weight to carry as a especially even as like as a 9-year-old through teenage years.
Yeah.
To feel that. that way.
I think I definitely felt that way. Even then, I kind of sensed that and recognized that, like, oh man, I like, and it's sort of this internalized racism that I've had to kind of deal with as I've gotten older into my, you know, later 20s and stuff like that. But all of this to say, yeah, I grew up that kind of kid. I learned the cuss words at like fourth grade, and then I decided never to use them. And then I kind of stuck to that until into my mid 20s. Like, I think I was 26 the first time I ever said a four letter expletive ever. Like, literally never. And a lot of people are surprised by that, but I'm like, yeah, I think because it was so deeply ingrained, not only on one level, but two, like not only religiously ingrained, but also racially ingrained.
Wow.
But I, like, even in songs, like when I'm singing alone by myself in my car, two songs, like as a 24-year-old, I still would never say curse words. Like, I would skip them.
I go back and forth. Some days I'm feeling like I still do that, by the way. And then I just say it.
Yeah.
But then I think the majority of the time I skip the cuss word.
Yeah. Just like, isn't that weird?
Because that's, yeah,
it's so culturally powerful. But yeah. to connect to your story, Jesse, sorry, am I cutting you off?
Well, I was just going to say, but one of the things for you was like, it was a moment of trauma in essence that you were in. Mm-hmm. And that was, I remember the first time I ever heard you say it, and I wasn't even surprised because wow. It was such an intense moment that it was like, yeah, that makes sense that he would use a word to try and get to the root of what he was feeling at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, so yeah, it was during my divorce, kind of the whole divorce journey, with my wife that was kind of the first time I ever felt kind of that welling up. And for me, I think that's what it was. It was like, I'm trying to connect with an emotion that I genuinely feel, but I've never experienced or have words to say or to verbalize. And finally kind of was able to connect. And for me, it was in the context of a close friend with Jesse, where I was able to say, like, oh, kind of name, like, this is what I'm feeling, and kind of use.
Was I the first person that you said it around?
Well, I think I had, like, I had been doing journaling and, like, praying. I think I had verbalized it in, like, a private moment
but
before.
But I was the first person.
But, yeah, you were the first friend.
It?
Yeah, to hear me.
Anthony, you have no idea how privileged I feel.
What an honor.
Wow. Sean, you can just go away.
Sean is nothing to me.
This is an Anthony and I moment.
Sean is, like, a bug under my feet as a – no.
When I said, Sean, you can just go away, I wanted to say other words, but then I had to catch myself because we're not in a private conversation as friends.
For sure. No, yeah. So, but I think, yeah, what you're connecting to, what you're trying to say with all this, Jesse, and I think the reason you brought this up is, number one, just to be honest, you know, because I think none of, and I don't think we have portrayed ourselves as like paragons of perceived, you know, moralistic purity and immaculate. I'm not even sure where the sentence is going. We're not perfect. I don't think we've ever portrayed ourselves to be in that way. And I think, like, these experiences that we have, and this is the reason why I think in recent years I have shifted on that, is because I do think certain experiences we go through and moments we have in life, they call for language that can't be described with anything else than those words that are often used to intensify. But I guess that it connects us back around to, like, is that wrong? Because that's really the question,
Sean,
we're asking.
Sean, for you, you were cussing like
from
like
birth.
Third grade.
Right out of the womb.
Sean grew a beard in seventh grade, and so I'm assuming he was cussing by first.
Cursing like a sailor, beard like a sailor.
What was it like? What was your Sean? Because you, I mean, it's hilarious. I don't know how many people actually know this. You were the kid that, like, one of our friends, his mom literally said, "Don't be friends with Sean," or like didn't want him around. And he was the kid who was so sheltered. He thought the, like, you know, the bunny ear symbol that you put behind someone's head when you're taking a picture.
Oh yeah, wow.
He thought that was a bad thing, and so he wouldn't do it. Like, we have a picture where he has.
For a second, I thought you were talking about me, but you're talking about our mutual friend. Our mutual friend thought this. Yes, yes.
He has all five. Like, he has, like, his hand, like, outstretched, like all five fingers up, because he thought that the two fingers was bad.
Oh, it's evil.
So that was him. And then his mom was like, "Stay away from Sean Lenhoff because Sean's
that's such
a bad
classic
influence.
Kid."
Yeah. Well, it actually wasn't from swearing. It was just that as a pastor's kid, like, I don't know. Anthony and I talked about this. I got in a lot of trouble as a kid. I got thrown out of Sabbath school regularly. The Sabbath school.
Sean was the bad kid. And guys, sorry, I'm going to out everyone. Sean was the kid who taught me the word.
I wasn't there.
Yeah, you weren't there. We didn't go to fourth grade together.
This is libel. This is straight up libel.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
You're using Sean's name in vain.
JK. We good.
No, Sean.
No, but I didn't actually swear much.
How do you
much,
get kicked out? But how do you get kicked out of Sabbath school? Just real quick, one quick story.
Just being, well, I don't remember all the specific. When you're a kid, you don't realize how disruptive you are.
That's true.
You don't get it. And I understand that now as a junior high teacher, I'm paying my penance.
it's literally cosmic karma that you're a junior high teacher, Sean.
I know. No, they really don't understand fully. And so... Yeah. You know, I can say I was disruptive. I was constantly talking to kids during it. I would joke around. I wouldn't take the song service seriously. I'd try to whisper and mess around. I'd try to steal muffins from the side where it was supposed to be after the service. You know, and it actually got to the point where one of the Sabbath school leaders said, you know, you don't have to come.
Wow.
So, and there's other stories. Like amazing. I got, even in high school, I got thrown out of Bible class and... Mr. Weir will still remind me how happy he is that I'm a teacher now and I have to go through that. So, yeah.
Okay, sorry, I distracted you.
No, but actually, no, swearing was never much of a thing, I think, until high school for me. It never became an issue. I got in trouble for it, except for a few times at home. Like, definitely the gamer rage was real with me. You guys know I'm a very competitive person, and it's never... I've never gotten in trouble for swearing because I was swearing at someone. In fact, looking back on my whole life, I don't think I've ever legitimately sweared at someone. Like the idea of saying, it's hard to say words. Saying, you know, saying F you to someone. I've never done that seriously, you know, in a legitimate, like trying to put down someone. And so it's always been kind of like a thing where, you know, you stub your toe, like, it happens. Like, I don't know. That's always been a thing. So,
yep.
But I never got in trouble for it per se. I think definitely like caught, like maybe I said something bad when you get a game over in a game, you know, I had gamer rage as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
But it was never something that it was always just the assumption that, you know, this is going to cause you trouble. I never thought about what I was doing. As a kid, you don't think about those things. You don't think about why something matters or not. You just know that you're going to get in trouble if you say this. That's all it was for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And so I actually want to lead into this idea of, is there a different level of like you're swearing at someone, you're cussing them out versus like this idea that if you're in your house and you're just like, you get home from a long day of work and you're just like, you know,
you're just
tired and you say something out of exhaustion or frustration or whatever it is. Is there a difference between those two things?
Is there a difference between a intensifying language being harsh language being directed at somebody or just being used out into the world, essentially, what you're saying?
Or in private. I mean, well, Sean, I would say that, well, for instance, like what you described, actually, I think, wasn't this brought up in the post that you posted?
Yeah, we should go to Facebook.
Because I think it's in there that someone actually brought that up, and I was like, hey, that's actually really good. Where they talk about, I don't use cussing words at people. And I thought that was pretty interesting. I don't know, Sean. I think to answer your question, I think it's always a matter of intent, and I think it's always a matter of wisdom to some degree, because for instance, you may be with, like, if all of us were out in public and we were all just swearing at each other, we would be fine. But the perception or the feelings that other people have being around us, it's not a wise decision, in essence, to do that.
Yeah.
So there's that. But then also on the other side of it, it's like there's actually like intention. What's the intention behind what I'm saying or what I'm...
This is like a... everything is lawful, but not everything is helpful or beneficial sort of thing is what you're saying?
I think so. I think to some degree, yeah. Because in essence, what cultural words are we going to pick out and just say these are bad forever?
For sure.
Or is
exactly.
it always society that's deciding what words are those, what did you call them?
Like intensifiers?
Intensifiers. Like what it, I mean, that's not Christianity deciding them. That's even society to some degree.
For sure.
I mean, you don't have to be in a Christian place. Like, there's plenty of places that don't allow cussing simply because it's cussing and they don't want that kind of language. So, and it's not, there's no religion involved. So, I mean, is it society that decides what's negative and then Christians just have to abide by that? Mm. Or is it about intention? Is it about wisdom? Is it about being like, I mean, when I say wisdom, what I mean is like being aware of who you're around. I mean, like I make it a point and will continue to make it a point around my 5-month-old daughter not to cuss. Even if I'm like talking to you guys,
that was going to be one of my questions on this episode.
Yeah. Like I don't want her to just start using it, without having gone through some sort of journey like we have of learning language for herself. Mm. I certainly don't want to, make people uncomfortable. Yeah. And I don't want people to feel like, based on the words I use, that they should have a specific opinion of me. And so because of that, it's like in a church setting and really actually for me in any setting, but pretty much like our friend group.
With close trusted friends is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I tend to not use swear or cuss words. But yeah, like I said, I think it's intention and wisdom. Those are my two things.
This seems like we're sort of heading towards wrapping up here. Sean, I heard you take a breath, so I know you want to say something real quick. As we're wrapping up, like, or starting to...
Are we actually wrapping up?
I don't know. We can. We don't have to.
We just... Someone always just says it randomly in our conversations. I'm like, are we?
That's very
Look,
true.
Our main criticism is we're too long-winded, Jesse. Everyone...
That's not our main criticism. That's one guy, one review on Apple Podcasts. That's one.
And we took... Okay. It hurt our hearts. No, we don't have
to. We took it to heart, yeah.
I haven't slept since. Yep.
I mean...
That was last year.
Just imagine.
Sean's just looking bedraggled.
But
okay, sorry,
I think
anybody.
What I was trying to get to is like, there's a couple of verses that I think kind of tease out like how we ought to live like practically that I think are pretty interesting. The first one is Matthew 12:36, where Jesus says, where he's talking about careless words. Where he essentially says like we will have to give an account for every single careless word ever spoken before God. So that one's wild. And then the other one is Philippians 4:8, which is like, which Sean and I, we talked a little bit about this when we were having the Halloween discussion, but that's the mm-hmm. one that where he essentially says, whatever is good, whatever is noble, whatever is beautiful, meditate on these things. Both of those verses are pretty interesting. The careless words one, what do you guys think about that one as it pertains to swearing?
I think the second one doesn't pertain to this as much as the first one does. Because the second one, really what it's saying
isn't
is,
the second
is
one talking about internally, though? That one seems to be,
where's your heart at? What are you consistently putting yourself into?
Mm.
And so I guess for us, I think it's less of a thing. But I think if someone else is feeling like literally their entire life is kind of taken over by using certain language to be cool, to fit in, whatever it is. Like, I think it has different in meaning at that point.
Mm.
So I guess that's, you convinced me that it does actually apply. But I think to the first one, the careless words, I think that's more, what's the word?
Yeah.
It's getting an idea across rather than a specific like literal truth. Mm. Because I don't think we're gonna stand before God and God's gonna be like, when you were in fifth grade,
right,
you know, or fourth grade, someone took you behind the slide and said the F word, then you went in the bathroom, said it in the mirror, you said seven different words, okay, explain why.
Right.
Like, I don't think God's gonna do that to us. But I think the idea behind that is, what are we putting out into the world?
Mm.
Over the most part, is, you know, because I noticed that my careless words are not generally saying a cuss word. My careless words are in accidentally degrading someone when I didn't mean to, or putting someone down because of something in my own heart that wants me to push them down because I feel like I'm below them or something like that. I think there's a lot more of that for me specifically, where when I'm not thinking about that, what is that cause in the world?
Mm.
What do my words cause in the world? And it's funny because amongst us as friends, you know, when we use a word and it's with the intention of making it funny, mm-hmm. generally it's like that's not causing harm, it's not causing negative, it's not nothing, it's hilarious if anything. But when I'm outside of that space, there's definitely a let me go back to that. But even inside of our friend group, it's like
yeah.
there are things that I can say that are jokes, but then they go too far, you know. Yeah. But it's not even the words I'm using; it's who I'm saying it about or what's beneath what I'm saying.
Well,
to
interrupt and maybe play devil's advocate, like I think there are many of those who would say that even within the context of a close group of friends, when you're using a word, because those words are inherently wrong and degrading. Those words are still sinful. Those words are still wrong. How? What do you guys think about that?
Well, it depends on what you think the effect is. There's literally like a study that was done. I don't know how like intense the study was, but they were. I think it was just kind of more
study size polling. Six people.
But they were. I asked my mom. They were talking about how like amongst men specifically, mm-hmm. there can be the effect that men's egos get checked mm. by their friends insulting them. Like, cause we always kind of give each other a hard time.
Oh yeah.
There's almost That's this feeling funny. Of like, you're not better than you, that you can't think you're all that
yeah.
because your friends are constantly giving you
you're
a
not
hard
as good
time.
As you think you are. Cause your friends bring you down to earth.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, there's actually something I think
well,
is
cause they know
that.
Who you really are.
Yeah. True. They know
they know what's behind the suit and tie.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly. So there's that, and I think so. It can be good, but yeah, I think it's really about intention, but also about how someone else is receiving it.
Well,
and that's one yeah. thing you can't really know, especially with strangers.
Yeah.
Or even just acquaintances, you can't always know how someone's going to receive something. So it seems to me mm-hmm. that it is always better to err in the side of building people up, growing their confidence in themselves. And speaking words that bring life and not death. I don't know, but that's very general.
Well, yeah, and so. I guess to double down on my devil's advocacy, so we had done an Instagram poll of you guys, the listeners, and about 60 of you responded to the question, is cursing a sin? And 50...
That is an appropriate sample size. I feel like we
exactly.
could probably make... I feel like we could probably
it's better than six.
Publish this in a peer-reviewed journal.
Oh, yeah.
At this point, so.
it's clearly
it's
scientific.
It's a qualitative study.
Yeah, true. Qualitative, exactly. Not quantitative.
It's quantitative.
True. So 60 of you responded, and from that, 53% of you said yes, cursing is a sin. 47% of you did not, and that's I think what I'm trying to represent is I think for many people, which is wild that I'm on this side trying to represent this. Perspective, but
you're not, and you're also calling this the devil's advocacy while you are
well,
going for the more conservative position. So what are you saying,
well,
Anthony?
Well, I'm devil's advocacy in this conversation, not because I necessarily think that position is incorrect.
Anthony, I'm giving you a hard time.
Yeah, that's true. Fair. I think like for a lot of people, like certain words are negative and harmful. And no matter how you use them, it doesn't change that. Like, that's the standard. And it's important to remember that. I think to people who would say that, I think they would advocate for, man, we ought to be cautious in our words no matter what our setting is. And it kind of makes me think of, like, I remember there was a time for us as a friend group during undergrad where I remember when we all became convicted around a really similar time. Like around the kind of the concept, the idea, maybe you guys remember this or not, the idea, like what we talk about the most is really who we are. And I remember us like kind of coming together and talking like, hey, like we like joke in a crass way a lot. Like we joke in a crass way more than we talk about like Jesus or like.
I don't think it was about quantity. I think it was just about like, this is something that doesn't seem to mesh with the rest of our lives. But it wasn't words. It was the content of... Well, it wasn't... I mean, I guess in the sense that it wasn't like a cuss word.
Yeah.
It was like...
Oh, yeah,
it was
yeah.
making jokes that we had made when we were in high school.
Exactly.
In essence, that were still funny. But,
yeah.
But or that I guess it was like they kind of put our minds in places that weren't...
Exactly. Yeah. And so I bring up that story only to say, like, a thing that I think you would agree with, Jesse, is like how you live out in the world says a lot more about who you actually are than what you think you believe about yourself. Like the words you actually use, how you speak to others, it says a lot more than the ideal of yourself that you have in your head. Or
no, I disagree with that.
Or, you know, like the idea, like a lot of us have the idea in our head of ourselves or how we would describe ourselves to others, but then the way that we live actually, you know, the fruit, it's really just fruit. What Jesus would, yeah. That's what language Jesus would use, is like fruit. Like they'll know you by your fruit. And so I guess I come along those lines to say, like, how do we interact with that sort of like idea that like your fruit, how you live in the world, says a lot about your character and your heart? I think the answer is in what you've been saying and what, you know, I agree with, is really it's the intention and the heart behind the language you're using, the reason why you're using such language. But yeah, what are your thoughts about that? And you too, Sean.
I think it's in practice it can be hard. I do agree with you that's important. I just when it all comes down to it at the any time that we come down to an episode, it's always how does it look in practice? How do we actually, you know, how do we actually do this well? Because as Jesse said, we've had conversations before about our, you know, the way we carry ourselves and you know, what we say is a part of that, mm-hmm. and the conversations we have.
Because that seems to be so exactly what Jesus is talking about. Sorry to cut you off, Sean, but in this verse, right, in Matthew 12, a tree is known by its fruit. Essentially, he's talking about good fruit, bad fruit. A person who has a heart after God has fruit that looks like that. And that's essentially, I think, the argument that those people who would say, like, yeah, cursing's wrong, they would say that.
And I think there's half truth. I think there's half truth in that because yes, like if it in my heart, I don't care what other people think about what I say.
It
doesn't matter what it is. It could be a swear word or it could be it could just be just the way I'm talking. If I'm just flippant about that, then yeah, that reveals a lot about my heart and character. At the same time,
oh, sorry, you weren't saying you don't care about what other people say. You're saying if you don't care about what other people...
Oh, no. I'm not saying that for me. I'm saying that if you did that, I'm saying hypothetically speaking. Is that why? I was a little surprised when you said hot take. I was like, really?
I was like, Sean is out here saying, hey, I don't care one lick about what anyone thinks about what I say. Yeah. I'm gonna do me to the end, ride or die.
Yeah, I actually disagree with that stance. I really do. I think it's not to the extreme of being politically correct, but it's also, but it also matters. It should matter to Christians how people receive what we say. You know, and there is an element of that idea of being a stumbling block. Or another example is this idea of don't eat meat sacrificed to idols if it bothers someone.
Right.
If it's and I think there's truth to that concept. I also think, though, that we sometimes say, like you did, Anthony, we use certain verses or we use certain concepts and we say, therefore, don't say this.
Right.
I feel like sometimes it's a bit of a leap. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it sometimes can be a leap of logic because, yes, like we have to realize whether it's realistic or not, you know, certain swear words, wherever they came from, they have impact in certain ways with people. And so, you know, as a Christian, I should know that that matters and that bothers people. And this is where I'll go, even as Jesse mentioned with his daughter, you know, as Olin's growing up, but also as a teacher, right? I teach junior high. There's times that kids swear.
Yeah.
And so the way that I've handled that is I don't, when I approach them with it, I don't approach it as like a morally wrong thing. I approach it as a genuine life skill of like, I want you to be successful. And in this world, that's going to cause issues for you. If in public you're saying this, that tells me it raises concern for me, for you, because that will cause issues, especially with those that it bothers. And I'll even sometimes tell them like, personally, you haven't offended me. But when I see you do this and I see the way you carry yourself, that bothers me because I'm concerned for you.
Wow.
And I want you to be successful and I don't want you to cause hurt. And I want your reputation to be good. And I don't think that word represents you well in this setting.
And I
don't say it maybe that detailed. I say it in a simpler way for a junior high kid. But it's along those lines because, and that's what I'll tell Olin too, is if we just say it's morally wrong, like don't say it.
These are bad.
Like the third commandment says don't say it. It's so superficial and it won't sustain. As Olin gets older, as my junior high kids move to high school and college, it won't sustain them as it did not sustain us. So there's a much deeper... I'm just being honest.
We're the poster children for that.
True. Yeah, we're the poster children for why... why spiritualistic legalism doesn't work is what you're saying.
But look, let me be honest. I'm just going to be honest. I know enough people that I'm not even outing anyone. I'm saying I just have a suspicion that people swear.
People just do.
Like I know enough people beyond our even our friend circle where there's just, you know, within your own circle or in context, like it just happens. So what's the point of kind of creating this facade?
Yeah.
And it's an inconsistent
moralistic.
It's
a moralistic idea that no one's doing it.
Well,
it's kind of an inconsistent narrative.
It's the same thing. We did an episode on alcohol. Yeah, I was just about to bring that up. Season before. Yeah. It's the same thing. Like, I kid you not, there
same
was
thing with sex
like
before the marriage.
The amount of people that drink, that have had sex before marriage and all that stuff, like it is high. It's not low, it's high. But it doesn't seem like it's that high because no one talks about it or a lot of people act like they don't. And there's just some people who just don't. They don't drink, they don't swear, they never had sex before marriage. Like all those things and that's awesome. Like that's great. I'm not harping on that at all. It's just I'm just saying that it is something that tends to happen a lot more than we think. So exactly what you said, when we moralize it, we just make people hide it, and then we also make people feel bad about it and feel like there's this distance between them and God because of it. And I've actually suggested to people, like very specific situations. I was like, you need to go have a very honest conversation with God, and it needs to be unfiltered, and you need to use whatever words come to your lips at that point, because it says, is this in Proverbs, out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. In essence, there's this, and it might not be Proverbs. I actually don't know where that verse is. But anyways,
I'm gonna Google.
I'm a pastor. That idea is true, but I think that's why
that's Jesus. That's Jesus. Luke chapter 6.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Exactly. I knew that.
As pastors, we know where everything is found all the time.
It came from a doctor, so it's true.
Luke, oh my gosh. Way to come.
That was full circle. Well done, Sean.
That was epic. Okay.
That was nice.
So what I'm saying is that there's a space where I think honesty is demanded. I remember there was a time when I went through a pretty bad breakup, and I was sitting with our guy's dorm chaplain, who was a fellow student, and I would just unfiltered, and he just listened to me, and he let me just say all of the things I was feeling. What's funny is after being that unfiltered, I came to the point at the end of that, instead of being so mad and so depressed and so angry, I came to the point at the end of that of being able to praise God because he was so good.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm massively oversimplifying what happened in that night, but at the same time, I think that there's a space where honesty and sometimes using words that are just blatantly honest is a huge benefit to our communication. But that being said, I think that also requires wisdom. And so, I guess, Anthony, to what you're talking about, you could argue that anything that has a negative connotation in society, we should steer away from. But at the same time, if you spend your whole life trying to steer away from anything with a negative connotation, I mean, then you're just walking on eggshells your entire life. What I think instead is that a lot of this is a matter of spiritual maturity. Spiritual maturity and your social context.
Yeah.
And by that, I mean that we've been around churches, specifically probably of the Reformed tradition. We've been around pastors and people from those churches who they drink, and they drink consistently, but it's social drinking. They'll swear or they'll cuss, but it's usually like like what it's like using the word hell or the thing that refers to your butt.
Yeah.
Because, but yeah, I mean, it's the donkey word, Balaam's.
Yeah.
So they'll use those words, but here's the thing that I sense from them is that first of all, socially, it's not an issue for that tradition, or at least for their tribe of that tradition. And second, they're not doing it because they have anything to prove.
Hmm.
They're not doing it because they're like, I want to prove that I'm hard, you know, like,
yeah.
It's just, it's just part of their, it's part of their,
well, often
vocabulary, and it's normal and it's simple and it's, I don't know. So I think that's a piece. What I say, spiritual maturity in your context, mm-hmm. because spiritual maturity kind of gives you an idea of a wisdom about when to say it and when not to. I'm not saying I have that. I'm just saying that I think it mm-hmm. does, because I've seen it portrayed. And then second, I think it's your social context, because then that will kind of dictate where it's appropriate to be using certain types of language. I mean, yeah. Think about it. In certain conservative circles, it's not okay to use words that you wouldn't even think of. Like, there's the idea of spiritual formation. That was like a huge thing.
A few years ago, yeah.
When we were at Walla Walla.
Mm-hmm.
It was like a huge controversy. So if you were to say that word or those two words, like, it would have such a connotation that it would black out. Like, people wouldn't even listen to
you. Oh, yeah.
You.
Just there's kind of, so many,
block out of their mind.
There's so many, like, having the wisdom to know what topics to talk about, what words to use, what phrases, like, so that you don't like immediately shut out people, essentially. Because as soon,
oh yeah, like I mean,
it's same thing in politics. Yeah,
and if you're around liberal, a bunch of liberal people, if you ever said the phrase "Trump did something good," like then,
right, exactly,
they would block you out forever.
You're canceled.
So it's just that thing where it's like there's social context and words that aren't just like cuss words
for sure.
But that's where maturity and wisdom comes into play. I don't know.
I essentially have two thoughts. The first is. Well, okay, so the first is kind of like responding to what you're saying. I think that Paul kind of, he sort of responds to this in a really cool way in the book of Ephesians chapter 4. He essentially says, this is verse 29, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth, but only such as that is good for building up as fits the occasion. That words that give grace to those who hear, and do not grieve the Holy Spirit by whom you were sealed. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor, slander be put away from you. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another." It kind of, I read this verse because it kind of speaks to this idea that, I think I've brought this up on the podcast before, how as Adventists, I think we often look at the whole of Scripture through this Old Testament lens. We look through Scripture through an Old Testament lens, and I think part of it has to do with kind of our history and how our church was founded, and a lot of, we went back to the Scriptures, we have a high value for truth, all good things, but we look at the Scriptures through this Old Testament lens, and sometimes we have to stop and remember, like, we live in the post-resurrection New Testament era. Like, we don't live in the Old Testament era. So to even ask the question, is this a sin? Should I do it or should I not do it? Like, that's missing the whole framework of the New Testament vision, which is a completely different framework for even looking at life. Like, the old framework was, is this wrong? Like, how can I like live my life like in with through all the loopholes so that I'm not doing that X specific thing, you know, like, especially mm-hmm. like teenage thinking or like elementary school thinking, like I didn't break the rule. I didn't say it, like, you know, when you say like, oh my gosh, or oh my word or whatever, you're trying to like skirt around kind of like the rule, but you're being legalistic about it. Whereas like the New Testament vision is it's not like, what's the opposite of proactive? I'm blanking.
Reactive.
It's not reactive, but rather it's proactive. It's actually, you know, it's seeking out, let's live my life in a way that all of my words build up others, that all of my words mm-hmm. give love to others, rather than just like trying to nitpick and find, like keep the letter of the law in a sense. And that's essentially what I hear you saying, is like, there's a combination of wisdom. And as we're like living in a proactive way, because to me, it's like a completely different way of life than mm-hmm. trying to live like, man, what words should I avoid so that God doesn't like me, you know?
And yeah, and you may find that like you just don't want to use cuss words even amongst your friend group or anywhere else. And there's, I mean, hey, that's great. There's nothing, I think that's the thing when we ask, are words inherently bad? I don't think so.
Hmm.
But I think that there is a very complicated relationship that we have with how to use them.
Mm.
And I think it's going to be different for everybody. But at the same time, there's just some, I think, basic there's some basic, what's the word?
Like wisdom?
No, I think feelings around it that that
perceptions.
The more that I grow older, the more aware I am of the impact my words have. And so I think that's part of the journey as well, is like maturing and growing, learning when and where and how to speak with wisdom. I think those are all just things that I want to build in my life, like those skills and those that awareness, I guess.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
So if that comes down to someday just like, yeah, I just don't ever really feel the need to use anything that's considered a cuss word. Like, hey, that's awesome. And if not, I think it's just we have to be careful about over-moralizing it to the point where you're a sinner because you might think or say a specific word. So.
In some ways, I think this is connected to go back to what you said about the sex before marriage. Like, it's connected to that and the alcohol episode in the sense like, because in those episodes, from looking at the studies, we found, oh, wow, like, I forget the exact numbers, but it was upwards of 80%+ of people, you know, have sex before marriage, are drinking regularly. Yeah. And so I do think there's truth to what Sean said earlier, that most people are swearing. And I think that makes sense based on the data of the other two. But I think it kind of leads us to... you know, like sort of approach us in a similar way that we did to those, because for those it was like, oh man, in Adventism we seem to have this like culture of like, you know, like everyone is pretending that nobody does these things, and so we have this culture of like pretense and perfectionism so often. It's so, and I'm not saying everywhere, you know, I don't want to make a blanket statement, but so often in Adventist culture it seems as if there's this sort of perception like, oh, nobody, everyone's pretending like nobody does these things, and so we all feel this expectation to not really come to community and to the text and to church and to each other with honesty, but this like pretense and this falseness, which we've always said like conversations and honesty are the answer to. Do you guys think that's still the answer for this one?
I think so. When I look at the practical way, is it like the message being like, oh, so we should just tell kids and everyone else just start swearing now. It's totally fine.
Right.
No big deal. No, I don't think that part changes. I think the biggest thing is our reaction to it. So when it happens, or even just discussing it, if you're older, of course, but how do we react to it? What does that say about how the message comes across? You know, if it's just like disgust, right? Like super offended, or like, oh, you're in big trouble for saying that. You know, the classic idea of washing the mouth out with soap.
Yeah.
Old school way of dealing with swearing.
Punitive, yeah.
So what message does that tell anyone?
Right.
And I don't think it leads to a healthy conclusion. In fact, I'm not going to say specifically, there was someone on the thread that I posted on Facebook just asking if, you know, that question, is swearing a sin, and got a lot of great responses there. You know, one person was honest and said, yeah, you know, I still swear, but I see it as a problem. I know I have this problem. And, and to a certain point, I understand that if it's truly about like you've hurt people with your words, or you've had a difficult time controlling your emotions or the things that you say to certain people, I think that can be a problem. But I think that, like you said, Anthony, we've created it into this isolated concept of just using a specific word is sinning. And it's such a narrow view of what our relationship with God, you know, what this idea of righteousness is, and what it means to be in relationship with God. You know, I think it's a very narrow way of looking at it. And so I think that attitude, though, is felt by many. I know that growing up, that's kind of how I perceived it too. And I think it's much, as we've talked about, much deeper here. I know that our detractors will probably say that, you know, no, we should just take a strong stance on it because it's too difficult and too messy to try and explain that, especially like to young people. But I would say that is the same reason why with alcohol, with sex, with this, with anything, no, we can't take that path. What fruit has that brought?
Yeah. It's just brought a bunch of hiding.
Yeah, hiding,
yeah, it's brought hiding. It's brought legalism. Yeah. It's brought a narrow view of God. And the irony of ironies is that's breaking the third commandment more than a swear word.
That's so good, Sean.
Dang. Wow. So good. Sean, you've come full circle twice, and it's been really
good.
Sean,
this has been your shining moment, this episode.
I hardly ever say positive things about it.
Well, and no, Jesse, really we good. Actually, that's I feel really like good, we need to have almost our own, as we wrap up, I'm saying it again.
There it is.
Once two of us have said it,
we
it's going to happen.
We probably should wrap up, though.
But when you say that, though, Jesse, like we've already talked about, you know, in our friend circle, there's things we'll say that we wouldn't say in public, you know, all those things. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's still almost a separate conversation on that. And even just this idea, I know that Patty McCoy has always said that the sixth love language is ridicule.
Oh, yeah.
Like when you really love someone, you make fun of them. And and that's a challenging concept, you know, because this actually goes in some ways back to Philippians 4:8, which could almost be, I'm questioning if that could be its own bad explanations episode, because I've heard Adventists quote it the most when relating to other topics, not just, you know, swearing. I think we've talked about that a bit. But whatever is holy, whatever is pure. And here's the leap, right? Therefore, don't watch this TV show that has swearing or violence.
Or
therefore, don't play video games. Don't read fiction. And look, I'm not trying to divulge too far or go off the path too much, but I think there's a conversation there.
Yeah, definitely.
I think there's something to be said. But it's the same spirit. I'll just spoil it and say it's the same spirit of, are we legalizing something that wasn't meant to be in scripture? And I'm questioning that for Philippians 4:8. I wonder if that maybe we've oversimplified or made it superficial in practical application within certain circles, at least that I've heard. And so with this, again, I think we have to be willing to get messy. The messiness of growing up and teaching people about how to carry yourself and what it means to be a child of God. It's not always this black and white, like do this, don't do that. And I know that's a dangerous thing to say. I know that is the slippery slope that almost every somewhat traditional or conservative Adventist is afraid of for any issue. But at the same time, humanity is so messy, and just being a Christian doesn't save you from that.
I think it goes back to kind of what I was saying, where it's like, I want to learn how to be wise with my words, and I want my daughter to learn how to be wise when thinking about it too.
Yeah.
Because like, that's really what it comes down to. Like, you know, there's certain things that what you were saying about whatever is pure and lovely and all of that, think on those things. It's like, that could be different for different people. Not that it's like so different than it's like somebody's thinking about murdering somebody and that's pure and lovely. I'm just saying that like that there's enough leeway in that, within common sense, to know that there are certain things that are good for some people and terrible for other people. Like we talked about social drinking, great for some people, awful for
some
other people.
Can't
because
do
it leads
it,
straight to alcoholism. It's the same thing with words, I think. And what's hilarious, we talk about this, but actually one of my biggest pet peeves is when people rely on cuss words in their, like, it's like a crutch in their dialogue.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, I'm not saying you're morally wrong. I'm just saying it annoys me. I just want you to have a bigger vocabulary where you don't have to use that word over and over again, especially because it's just annoying to hear. Or it's like, it's just annoying when someone just is if you're just sitting out in the middle of a park and just someone gets up and if they just yelled the F word, I'd be like, that's annoying.
Yeah.
But it's not about the word as much as it is about what someone is doing, why someone might be doing it, where it's like, do you just want attention? Like, have you just not read widely? Like, I don't know, just things like that. I feel stuck up all of a sudden, but it's just, that's what, for me, it's like, it doesn't have to be morally wrong. It can, but it can also be annoying to just hear someone use cuss words all the time. So,
And like, it's kind of crazy that we could almost say there's some value in those words for certain moments in life. And what's interesting, even there haven't even been studies on the fact that when you use them too much, they actually lose their purpose, which actually there have there's been studies even on the purpose of swear words where it increases pain tolerance. Like they can show you can withstand painful situations. Like they've looked at childbirth for women.
Yeah,
they've looked at it, and just even other control studies, like holding your hand in a big jar of ice water. Like, you can do it longer if you're swearing versus
not. What you're saying is my wife wouldn't have had to have an epidural if she just was yelling the F word consistently throughout the next six.
How long was the labor?
That's a dangerous choice. So through the 6 hours of her labor.
That's how natural childbirth people do it. That's how they make it through. No, but look, I'm even saying that as like, take it or leave it, those studies, whatever conclusions you want to make from those things. But all I'm saying is, yeah, connecting to what you said, Jesse, just using them flippantly and without regard to what other people think, yeah, there's a heart behind that could be concerning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it could lose its value. So even if there is some value in those words and like your moment at Sunset Lake and communicating to God, like it, if it was always that way, like if you started every prayer like that, it would lose its, you know, and that would make me really question. Like,
I was going to actually mention that there have been times, there's one time specifically I remember I wasn't nearly as mad. I was just trying to speak freely, but I felt as soon as I started doing that, I was like, I don't really need to right now.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of this, like, I think a spirit check, not so much as what you're doing is wrong as much as you just don't need to, like, just, you can be real without that.
Yeah.
But I have more than one time had very honest and upfront conversations with God that have involved using words I wouldn't normally use. And those have been really meaningful moments in my life.
Hmm.
So it's, I like what you're saying about words are tools in essence, and they can be used as such.
Isn't that exactly, I mean, where the scriptures are heading the whole time? I mean, the whole idea of a new covenant where God would write his law on our heart, like we always come back to Jesus, like, so often, I think, in the ends of episodes, but I feel like it's for good reason.
Yeah,
like,
we should really stop doing that.
True.
It's just that's dumb. We should... like, and I think we do because it's so, obviously, it's so poignant and so strong. Like his words about where your treasure is, there your heart will be, and out of the overflow of the heart comes the actions. Like, it sounds like a cop-out to say... And I think that's the tension. Like, it sounds like a cop-out to say, like, it's all about the heart. It's all about your intention. It's all about what's in your heart. But I think it really is, like, because I think that's what, like, the scriptures are leading us towards, is having a heart that, like, wants to bear the fruit of the Spirit in our life. Like, we want to bear the Spirit, and wherever the Spirit leads me, like, that's where I want to go. Like, saying words or not saying words, like, that's not part of, like, who cares? Like, if I can bear the fruit of the Spirit, if God is leading me towards... Like, I want to go where that's leading me, you know, and
see what that goes with, Anthony, is, you know, again, someone will come back at you and say, oh, well, that's just then a cop out for you can say whatever you want. I'm like, wait a second, though. I would say if you're looking for cop outs like that, whether it be with swear words or anything else, that's the problem.
Exactly. It's not because that's the heart.
Root.
Yeah.
The action is not the root of the sin. You know, whether it be swearing can be a revealer of
sin. That's actually really good, Sean. Sin. Yeah.
You know, the way that you know, we've talked about other topics as well, where the actual action reveals perhaps what's going on behind the scenes. And so in the same way, if someone's saying, oh, this isn't a strong enough stance, and oh, it's just giving people an opportunity to say what they want, and it's, you know, it's like how we were joking, the fact that, you know, if there was someone actually named with it in our history books at school,
with a curse word,
the F word is the last name,
like
we would as kids just be, oh yeah, now we have an excuse to say it. But what did that tell you about our hearts? Number one, we're immature. But it wasn't the problem of saying the F word, it's the fact that we were jumping on finding a loophole.
That's
the issue. So if
Sean's
anything
on fire,
Sean's on fire today.
Gosh,
If I'm ever doing something out of that heart of what can I do? But the Pharisees did the same thing. If they had, you know, they wanted to break Sabbath, bottom line, they wanted to. The way that they set it up.
Yeah, for sure.
The way that they set up Sabbath, they wanted to break it. So, you know,
how can I set this up so I can find a loophole so I can still do it?
You weren't allowed
to
heal on the Sabbath, according to them. Mm-hmm. If you had a toothache, you know, you weren't allowed to use things like vinegar or other things that would heal it. So they would dip their bread in vinegar and put that on their mouth, but they were eating, so it was okay.
Class.
That's the kind of level they would go to.
It's wild, yeah.
And that is worse then again, you come there. Here comes Jesus trotting down, healing people and doing all these things. Right. Like, look,
what a Wild West rodeo kind of
you've
boy.
You've missed. Yeah, just exactly.
Trotting through town,
cantering,
finger gunning at people as they get healed left and right.
Like Spider-Man 2. Is that Spider-Man 2 or 3?
It's 3, I think.
Oh, my word.
Seeking what they saw, borderline sacrilegious.
Sorry.
But really, it's just, that's what he did, though. He so blatantly showed them, you've got this so wrong that you are taking and carrying my name in vain in such a worse way by pretending to be religious and legalistic than what I'm doing right now, which is the essence of what Sabbath should be about, which is healing and connection with me. That's so really
what an insane reversal that is. Like what an insane reversal that, because so often I think the perception outside of religion and even within is what the Pharisees were about and what they were doing. Like, how can I do this so perfectly so that, you know, like, how can I keep all these things? How can I be good? How can I be a good person so God will like me when I die, you know? But but Jesus comes
in
with the opposite.
That says you don't know God. If that's what you want out of God, then you don't know him.
Wild.
So as we close, all three of us said it.
All three.
We have to.
Thank you for joining the light side, Jesse.
Actually, so I just wanted to point out as we close that Eric isn't here with us for this episode, and it's because he's actually the worst out of all of us, I think. Hands down. But the problem is that I'm saying this right now, and he has the power of editing, and so I think that probably he's going to start bleeping. Like random words out. Like, we're just going to say.
He probably will do that.
Oh, we Eric, and he's just going to bleep it out. Or we're going to say Eric, and he'll bleep it out. I feel like that's going to come. Anyways,
I think that's it. Well, all right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Seeking What They Sought. Definitely an interesting one, as you guys probably heard and could tell. If you have any thoughts about this topic, or you want to share with us any comments or thoughts or something we said you disagree with, please reach out to us, send us a message, shoot us an email. If you have our number, shoot us a text. We love to hear feedback and just have conversations with you guys, so definitely do that. Before we're done, just want to thank all of you for your continued support, for answering Facebook questions, for engaging with Instagram polls, for showing up to our live events that we've had a couple of. It just really means a lot to us, and we're super, super excited to do more of those moving forward. So without further ado, I want to thank Eric Edstrom, our 17-time tree chopping champion of the world, for making us sound beautiful. Thanks, Eric. We love you a lot. We'll see you guys next time on Seeking What They Sought.